Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show. Can you name that song and what musical it's from? Okay, you will win a free copy of my book if you do so. Just write Bruce at BruceAllen.com and you will get a free copy, which, by the way, you can get anyway right now until Christmas Eve. You just go to my website or you just buy it on Kindle for $2.99, the Emptiness Road Trip Blues. Just find it under that title, under Bruce Allen. You buy it, you send me the receipt, and I refund your money to your PayPal account and send you a free copy of the PDF. Not a bad deal, and that's good until Christmas Eve. And the email is bruce@bruceallen.com. It is time for the Women's Room with Dr. Jennifer Weberman, who has not been with us for a few weeks, and I'm very, very happy to have her for two segments. Dr. Weberman is a psychologist and parent coach with over a decade of experience helping children, teens, and parents empower themselves in positive ways. She has been affectionately referred to as the Super Nanny of Springfield, as she has helped hundreds of families restore peace to their homes. She can be found at theparentingplayground.com and often at Dad Chat, where I hope she will join us tonight. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Weberman.
Thank you, Bruce. I've missed you. It's been so long.
It has. Well, you have been through a little bit of tumult with your displacement and electrical loss because of Hurricane Sandy, but thankfully no serious physical losses of home and place and person, but I know it's been a tough time.
It's been a crazy time, but things are definitely back to normal, thank goodness.
Well, I'm happy, and I was concerned for you and all the people that have suffered and continue to suffer out east. My son, who's in Boston, felt very little of it directly, but he was aware of a pretty serious amount of weather when it was going on in his area, and first time he's probably ever experienced that. So the holidays are coming up, and we have decided to abandon, for the most part, the original topic for today's show, which is about the differences between men and women in shopping, since nobody of my guests seems especially interested in that. Happily, people seem to like the column, but I am very happy to talk about what is going to be the topic of Dad Chat, which is there's so much stress around the holidays, and it's supposed to be a happy time. What do you suggest starting in on how to handle the stress and how to survive and what tools to employ?
Yeah, it's interesting. You say it's supposed to be a happy time. I mean, the holiday season is about family get-togethers and gratitude and traditions. But for those same reasons, that could be exactly why it's so triggering for some people. And I use the word trigger. I love the idea of a trigger. Imagine your body actually has a button on it, and when it gets pushed, you just automatically become upset, whether it be frustrated or sad or angry. There are so many triggers
Why does my wife have 472 of those on her body?
Good question. How many do you have?
I only have a couple, but no matter where I touch, I'm hitting a trigger, it seems, a lot of the time. I'm exaggerating a little bit. That's kind of how I feel sometimes. But go on with the general notion of triggers. And for some reason, I think the biggest triggers deal with adult children and their parents.
For sure.
And yeah, because as adults, we think we've moved on. And then the moment mom and dad come in the home or we go in their home, especially if it's the same home we grew up in, a lot of those so-called triggers get pushed.
You hit the nail right on the head. I mean, for some people, nothing makes them hit the eggnog harder than the idea of spending a whole evening with their family. As an adult, you might think all these wounds have been healed, have been dealt with, and then you walk right back into that original situation where you grew up, and there's triggers, triggers, triggers. Maybe your mother's making comments about your weight, or your aunt's pressuring you to date her friend's son, who's such a nice boy, or you've got Uncle So-and-so, who's drinking too much and getting inappropriate, and all of your buttons are getting pushed. And it's really difficult. And I think what happens is that people end up dreading the event way in advance, which makes the unpleasantry last a whole lot longer. So if you're avoiding Christmas Eve dinner, and as you're thinking about it in November, well, you've got 4 weeks now of discomfort. And so there's a couple of things that I tend to recommend.
That's sort of like a wish or a nightmare fulfillment. I mean, by dreading it and by fearing it, you're almost making it happen instead of putting it in the context to make it not happen and find a way to make it okay.
Absolutely. The more you put something in the forefront of your mind, the more you end up doing things, behaving in ways, even non-verbally, that will sort of create or feed a communication. And then, of course, there's the situations where it's going to be unhealthy no matter what you try to do, because there's just an unhealthy dynamic that you know you're going to be walking into. And I think being prepared is about empowering yourself. I love the, and this may not work for everyone, but for some people they really can make this work for them, is that walking in with the mindset of being entertained instead of triggered. So when some of the triggers are really, they're not so harmful, but they're more of a nuisance. And you just go in there with the idea of being a spectator. I mean, we
yes.
all watch movies
yes.
where they make fun of inappropriate family members and the things they do during the holidays. If you walk into your own family dinner with that idea and imagine every inappropriate comment you hear is good fodder for your next phone call with your best friend or your next blog that you're going to write about it, like, you'll never believe what so-and-so said this time, it can make it a little bit less triggering because you can get some distance from it.
I agree. Again, that comes back to what I discussed a little bit with Wayne, my previous guest, which is the context in which you put these experiences, as well as managing your expectations. You know, I have one of the things on, you sent me a short list of ideas to discuss regarding this idea, this concept. And one of them is the single people or widows that have lost a loved one and feel the loneliness and sadness at this time of year. I find both my parents have passed in the last few years. And whenever I hear someone complain about being with their mom or dad or both parents, my first reaction is, especially when I know that the complaint is not about being with a horrible mom or dad. I mean, we're not talking about someone who sexually abused you. I mean, just the usual family, you know, mishigas, okay? Mm. And for my non-Jewish friends, that means nonsense, BS, whatever you want to say. So the usual family stuff. And my wife was telling me about a girlfriend of hers whose mom and dad want to come visit, and they wanted to stay for a longer period of time than the girlfriend wanted her to. They live completely out of town, and so this girlfriend hardly gets to see her parents, and she was, like, complaining about it. And I just couldn't help but think, oh, my gosh, what I would give for another day or two with my own parents. And here you're dissing the opportunity to spend whatever amount of time it is. And if it's too long, just negotiate a shorter time. But the idea, I sometimes come in the context of just keeping my mouth shut because I don't want to aggravate it. But my wife, too, sometimes she complains about her family. And I go, gosh, you have your brother. He's still alive, even though it's not a great relationship here and there. And your mom and dad are here. They come and stay with us. We visit them. And actually, we all get along pretty well, though she does sometimes get affected because of those triggers. So I fight the jealousy or envy that people have these problems.
I can see it. And that's a trigger for you when
yes.
someone's complaining about their family. And you think, I would love to be able to spend time with my family and complain about them, but they've passed. And so that's another trigger.
Yeah. Oh, and like when you talk about the thing, I know the things my mother would do that would annoy me. I mean, just because my mother's dead doesn't mean I put her on some pedestal and don't remember the things my mother would do that would annoy me. I know you want to talk about later about the conflict in a mixed household of Christmas and Hanukkah. My mom would go nuts with the Christmas tree that my wife has finally convinced me to accept in my so-called Jewish household. Well, I'm no longer a Jewish household. I'm a Jewish Christian household. And we've had that dialogue, which is something you and I can discuss if we want. But I could just picture my mother coming in the house and seeing that Christmas tree. She would plots. There's another Yiddish word. You want to give somebody a definition of plots?
Complain?
No, that's stronger than plain. Go nuts. Plots is like, it's big. It's like fetch. It's a... I don't know. A lot of Yiddish words a lot of them have SCH in them, you know, and they just always have a good k sound.
I know. They're very satisfying to say.
Suris, kvetch, schmuck. That's actually not a nice word, but schlemiel. There's another one I'm thinking of. Chutzpah. That's the best. Chutzpah. What does chutzpah mean?
Like cojones.
That's it, exactly. That's the word. Chutzpah means cojones.
It's a very slimy language.
I love it. I only know, my parents used to talk in Yiddish when they didn't want me to understand, because I only knew the big buzzwords. Listen, it's time for a break. We're going to continue with Dr. Ruberman after this break.
Just to be stronger.